Social birds like the finches can pick up diseases. You'll see finches just sit in the feeders and then they poop in there. And then if, you know, you're not scrubbing it with bleach constantly, they can spread this avian conjunctivitis. Sometimes you'll see, you know, their eyes have these growths on them. So that's all spread through bird feeders really easily. The other thing bird feeders can do is they can attract rats. Of course, we know they attract squirrels. They can attract raccoons. They can even attract coyotes. So I'm not saying that we shouldn't feed birds. I'm saying we have to be thoughtful about how we do it. And if it is turning out to cause problems, then maybe step back. Making sure that our homes don't have entrances for animals that we don't want living in them. So taking these steps to minimize conflict is the best thing that we can do.
I have been speaking with Lyanda Lynn Haupt. The title of her most recent book is The Urban Bestiary. I'm Kathleen Stevenson. Thanks for listening.
Dada, dada, dada day, Thursday, Thursday. Come one, come all to the Clinton Street Theater this Thursday for an evening of Dada film and music. We'll be playing surrealist silent films and cartoons, and the soundtrack will be provided by you, the audience. So bring your favorite musical instrument, kitchen implement, speak and spell, tantric bell, hotkeys, or tchotchkes to the Clinton Street Theater, Southeast Clinton and 26th Avenue in Portland, this Thursday, October 10th at 7 p.m. Tickets available at brownpapertickets.com. All proceeds benefit your community radio station, KBOO. Thursday, Dada, Clinton Street, KBOO.
At least the haggis arrived at a reasonable hour.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub, independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizza, salads, and wraps. Located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland, 503-232-5511 or laurelhursttheater.com.
Hello and welcome to a special membership drive edition of Words and Pictures on KBOO. I'm SW Concer, and I'm joined in the studio today by Jean Luen Yang, the author of Boxers and Saints. Welcome to the show, Jean.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So this is an epic book that you've put together. It's been called a diptych, which is kind of strange.
I never heard that term before this book started getting promoted.
But tell us about this story. This is a book that's set 100 or more years ago during the Boxer Rebellion in China, and it follows... One part of the book follows a character who's from the Chinese countryside, and another... Well, let's see. I'll let you tell the story of the two main characters.
Sure. So, Boxers and Saints it's a graphic novel in two volumes. It comes in two separate books, and it examines the Boxer Rebellion from both sides. The Boxer Rebellion is this war that happened on Chinese soil in the year 1900. On one side, it was the European soldiers, European missionaries, and Chinese Christians. And on the other side was this ragtag army of these poor, starving, illiterate Chinese teenagers. They were mostly from the farmlands, but there wasn't anything for them to farm because China had just gone through this devastating drought. And these teenagers were really angry about this foreign incursion into their homelands.
And the Chinese soldiers were on the side of the foreign interests then.
Well, the official Chinese government kept flip-flopping all the way through. And in the beginning, they definitely sided with the Europeans. So this group of boys, these poor illiterate boys, they came up with this mystical ritual that they believed would call the Chinese gods down from the skies, and these Chinese gods would possess them and give them superpowers. And then armed with these superpowers, they ran through the countryside fighting European soldiers, European missionaries, and Chinese Christians.
Yeah, it's sort of reminiscent of some of the stories of charismatic leaders you hear about in small wars, where they'll tell their followers that they're bulletproof or that they can't be hit by the enemy's arrows or something like that.
Sure. I've read some comparisons between the Boxer movement and ghost dancing that happened with the Native Americans. And it seems like there's some sort of... it's something that happens when a culture feels like it's on the edge of annihilation, right? At the turn of the century, people saw China as on the brink of destruction. People were predicting that this one country would break up into little pieces because the government was so weak. And that may have been connected to the Boxer movement. The Boxer Rebellion sits right in the middle of this period of Chinese history that they refer to as the Chinese century of humiliation, where China went from seeing itself as the center of human civilization, as the Middle Kingdom, to just on the brink of destruction. You know, that led to all the different revolutions that China went through in the 20th century. It started with the Opium War, and there was the Taiping Rebellion, and China going up and losing against both the French and the Japanese. And then finally, at the very end, after the government had basically been brought to its knees, there was this revolution, this Boxer Rebellion.
So your book or books, Boxers and Saints, it follows two very different characters on two different paths. Why don't you tell us about these two main characters?
Well, when I was researching the Boxer Rebellion, I felt very ambivalent about the entire incident. You know, I couldn't decide who the good guys were and who the bad guys were. And that's why I decided to do two books. The protagonists in one book are the antagonists in the other. So the protagonist of the Boxer book is this young man who desperately wants to become a hero. And that's really the driving question behind that book, is what does it mean to be a hero? And he eventually plays a pivotal role in the beginnings of the Boxer Rebellion.
And the beginning of the Boxer Rebellion isn't well documented. So you're able to take a lot of different versions of what happened and weave them together.
Yeah, absolutely. The Boxer Rebellion started with the poor, and often the history of the poor just isn't recorded. So today, you know, scholars aren't completely sure how the Boxer Rebellion began. We know that it began in these farmland communities within China. We know it began with these poor young men, but not much was written down about them until they made their way into the cities of China, where they encountered Europeans and the Chinese who were in power. So I read a bunch of books, but the one that was the most influential was by a man named Joseph Eschrek. He's a college professor. It's called Origins of the Boxer Uprising, and there he goes through a bunch of different theories as to what happened. I took a lot of the theories that he talked about and weaved them into a narrative, weaved them into this life story of this fictional protagonist.
You're listening to Words and Pictures on KBOO. Our guest today is Jean Luen Yang, the author of the award-winning American Born Chinese and the new book, Boxers and Saints. Now let's go out to our friends in Membership Central.
Hey, it's Lynn. I'm here with Ani, and we just have a rafter of thank you gifts for this show.
We do, a rafter of them, in fact. And let's tell people that you can get these brilliant gifts by giving us a ring at 877-500-5266. You can get a box set edition of Jean Luen Yang's two-part graphic novel. You've just heard the interview. Boxers and Saints, hot off the press as it is. And it's a historical epic. It's set in the era of Western expansion into China. You've, again, just been listening to SW Conser and Jean Luen Yang discuss this work. For your $75 contribution to KBOO, you can not only support KBOO, keep independent media strong, but you can also get a copy of Boxers and Saints. Again, this novel, it's sort of a box set edition of Jean Luen Yang's graphic historic novel. $75, 877-500-5266. What else do we got, Lynn?
We have a really special thank you gift here. We have got Craig Thompson's latest graphic novel. It's big, it's beautiful. It's called Habibi, and it's about sprawling across an epic landscape of deserts, harems, and modern industrial clutter. Habibi, and it's really beautiful. I have it here in my hot little hands. Craig Thompson did a beautiful illustration and autographing of this, and that is
it
yours.
Is so personalized.
It is personalized. Somebody's going to get it fast. Call right now, 877-500-5266 for a minimum $75 pledge of support. This can be yours, and it's really beautiful, and it's pretty much one of a kind.
I would have to say that is one of a kind with that illustration and signature on the title page. That makes it a very unique gift. Again, yours for a $75 contribution to KBOO, your community resource. Who do you turn to for information not only about politics, not only about the actions that are happening around us to change the world, but in fact, around the literary arts, around those things that provoke thought and actually give us culture in our lives? And I'd love to thank SW Concert for bringing the work of graphic artists and graphic novelists to the air every month here on Words and Pictures. As somebody who is a longtime graphic novel / comics fan like myself, I really appreciate getting to hear from these artists who are left out of really so much of the discussion in the mainstream. So please do support these
efforts. For 10 years they've been doing that.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's been great work. Words and Pictures have really brought some interesting discussions to the air. If you'll recall, back in the, about 10 years ago, when the Danish artists did the Muhammad cartooning, Conch was there. SW Concert interviewing folks about that, bringing all manner of really important political figures into this discussion of graphic novels and comics and artists. And that's the kind of stuff we do here
and
at KBOO.
To support
we mix
that,
it up. We support the overall
support
culture.
To support that, all you have to do
community.
Is dial 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. Do it right now. Help us make our goal for this show.
$250 is what we're looking to raise. With your help, do it now.
And you
want to
get this Craig Thompson book.
500-5266.
We're back with Jean Luen Yang. This is Words and Pictures. I'm your host, SW Concert. Jean is the author of the award-winning American-born Chinese and the new book, Boxers and Saints. So you have another protagonist who's a gal who's sort of aspiring to the Joan of Arc ideal.
Yeah. On the other side, the protagonist of the second volume is a young woman, a young Chinese woman who eventually converts to Catholicism. Now, when I was reading about these early Chinese Christians, what I found was many of them were people who were considered outsiders to Chinese culture. A lot of them were women, a lot of them were criminals, or they were indigent, and they just couldn't find a place for themselves in the mainstream culture that surrounded them. So they started looking to the stories of the other. They started looking to these European religious stories, you know, these Christian stories, to find reflections of themselves. The main character in the second volume is actually based on a relative of mine who, when she was a child, she was born on a bad luck day, according to the traditional Chinese calendar. And she had this little sister who was born on a good luck day. So her grandfather really favored this little sister of hers. You know, every time he had treats, the little sister would get them, but she would not. So eventually, as an adult, she converts to Catholicism. And even though she doesn't connect her childhood experiences to her eventual conversion, to me it seemed like the connection was very clear. You know, she wasn't able to find a place for herself within a traditional Chinese worldview, so she adopted the foreign worldview.
First Second Press published your book, American Born Chinese, which ended up winning multiple book awards, including the Eisner Award. It was a pick of many magazines. And it's a really fascinating book because, and this is not autobiographical, but like you, the main character in American Born Chinese is an American born Asian character in an overwhelmingly Anglo school, really wrestling with identity.
Yeah. I think that was something that I went through. And you know, especially the reception to American-born Chinese was much better than I ever thought possible. And in talking to a lot of readers of the book, it sounds like, you know, this experience of being an outsider, of being a minority, is pretty universal. I think most of us go through it. It may not be our ethnicities that make us the minority, but there's something about us, most of us, that makes us an outsider.
Well, comics artists, for example.
Sure, of course. Being a cartoonist or being a comic book reader even will make you a minority of some kind. So in that book, you know, when I was growing up, I did struggle for a time with my cultural identity, with my parents' culture and with how it didn't match the culture that I experienced in school and the different discomforts that brought along. So that book is really an exploration of that. the two main characters in that book, one is Jin, who is an American-born Chinese, and then the other one is Wei Chen, who comes to America much later, comes like when he's in fourth or fifth grade. They're modeled after these two groups of boys at my junior high. So there are actually two small groups of Asian-American boys. One group of us, we were born in the United States. We spoke English to one another. We listened to American pop songs. We would watch American movies. And then there was this other group that we used to call the FOBs, the Fresh Off the Boats, who came much later. And they would speak to each other in their native tongues. They wore these funny clothes with misspelled English words. They would listen to Asian pop songs. So we had this weird relationship between these two boys. You know, it was like this, it was a classically frenemy relationship. We would be nice to them. We would help them out in class if they needed it. But then behind their backs, we would just make fun of them relentlessly. And whenever we were in a larger context, we would make sure that people understood we're two separate groups. Now, looking back on that as an adult, I realized that the reason why we treated this other group of boys poorly was because of how we felt about our own cultural heritage, you know. But at the time, it felt natural to do it that way.
And then the book veers into these sort of fantasy sequences where Jin Wang has a blonde alter ego named Danny. And then these sections become kind of like a sitcom with a laugh track as Danny deals with his cousin Ching Ki.
Yeah, that's the
bucktooth character with the pigtail.
Yeah, that character is probably the most controversial part of the book. So I have this character named Cousin Ching Ki, who is the amalgamation of all the negative Asian and Asian American stereotypes that I could think of. I really wanted to talk about stereotypes in a very direct way, and I just use this character to do that. You know, in the end, I take his head off. So that was the main goal of that section of the book.
That's a transformational moment, though. It's also kind of a mythological moment, because you weave in, another thread that you weave in is the story of Monkey, who's sort of the Chinese trickster, sort of the equivalent of Coyote in this country, or Till Eulenspiegel in Europe. You know?
That's right. That's right.
But he's the character that challenges the gods, the pantheon of gods in the Chinese sphere.
Yeah, I grew up with stories of the Monkey King. My mom used to tell me about the Monkey King at bedtime when I was little. And I just had this deep love of this character, you know. When I started doing comics as an adult, I knew I wanted to do something with the Monkey King just because of my childhood connection with him. But when I researched him, what I discovered was that in Asia, he's so popular that he's almost his own genre. There's so many Monkey King comic books that he deserves his own shelf. So I found that really intimidating. I just couldn't think of something new that I would be adding to the world by adapting his story. And in the end, I hit on this idea of using his story to talk about the Asian American experience. So that's what those sections of the book are.
You're talking about creative writing and myth-making. Reminds me that you've also started a new project, which is you are the writer behind the series of comic books Dark Horse is putting out, based on the popular series Avatar: The Last Airbender.
And so
you're doing the writing, and there's a number of cartoonists working on this project.
Yeah, I work with a studio. It's two women. They live in Japan, and they're called Studio Gurihiru. They're amazing. So they're doing the art, and then I'm part of a team that works on the story. So I work pretty closely with the creators of the original show, with Mike DiMartino and Brian Konitzko. But Avatar The Last Airbender is this amazing show that was on Nickelodeon from 2005 to 2008. In my mind, it's probably the best American cartoon series ever produced. I mean, it's just phenomenal, the sort of stories that they were able to tell within that fantasy world. So when the show was on, I was just a fan. You know, I watched it. I would try to dissect how they came up with these amazing stories. And then a few years later, when Nickelodeon decided to ask Dark Horse Comics to produce this series of graphic novels that would continue the story after the show ended, one of the editors at Dark Horse asked me if I'd be willing to write it. And I jumped at the chance just because I admired that original show so much.
And there was a movie which I think to fans of the TV series was the equivalent of the Doctor Who movie that aired on Fox back in the late 90s. It was like, let's forget this ever happened.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a live-action movie called The Last Airbender, and most fans of the show find that that movie an abomination. It's horrible. In fact, my dislike for that movie was part of the reason why I got this job writing the comic. Yeah. So when they announced the movie, I was pretty excited about it. But then they announced the casting. And what they had done was, you know, within the original show was set in this Asian-inspired fantasy world. And it's pretty clear that all the characters are Asian or Inuit. In the same way that, you know, all of the characters in The Hobbit are English. You know, it's a fantasy version of England. Hobbit's set in the fantasy version of England. Avatar Last Airbender is set in this fantasy version of Asia.
I've met actual hobbits in England. Short, hairy-footed people.
That's right. So when they made this movie, they gave all the heroic roles to white actors. And I just felt like it was the latest example of yellowface, of this Hollywood tradition.
The Asian version of blackface.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Of taking roles that would most logically go to Asian or Asian-American actors and giving them to white actors. So I did this webcomic about how I was never going to watch this movie. And to this day, I still haven't watched it. You know, I've boycotted it. Although I've heard that the casting is the least of the issues. But one of the people who read this webcomic that I did about how much I disagreed with the casting was an editor at Dark Horse who had also read American Born Chinese. So from that webcomic, she knew I was familiar with the original series. And that's part of the reason why she offered this job to me.
You're listening to Words and Pictures on KBOO. Our guest today is Jean Luen Yang, the author of the award-winning American Born Chinese and the new book, Boxers and Saints. Now let's go out to our friends in Membership Central.
Hey there, I'm Lynn. I'm here with Ani. And
and we're his friends in Membership Central.
We are indeed.
And we are enticing you right now to give us a ring at 877-500-5266 and be friends out there in Radioland. It is important that you support the radio station that supports you day in and day out throughout the year. It's your community radio station, KBOO. You can, in fact, pick up a signed print. There's a totem pole print by Pat Moriarty. I can say that, I'm sure of it. Mm-hmm. And for your $100 contribution to KBOO, you can pick up this original print by Seattle cartoonist Pat Moriarty, featuring his own modern and quirky interpretation of the classic Northwest totem pole design. You can, for your $75 contribution, pick up a very nicely personalized edition of Habibi by Craig Thompson. It's an amazing epic adventure. It's a graphic novel of great size. I've been wanting to read it. It's been on my list for this last year. If you know, $75 minimum pledge, you can get this very wonderful personalized signed edition of Habibi by Craig Thompson. You can know that whatever your contribution, you are supporting KBOO, your community radio station, a community resource that supports you.
And all you have to do is call 877-500-5266. Help us make our goal of $250, a very modest goal for this show. A couple of phone calls can completely put us over the top. And you, as we have been all morning, we want to continue the momentum. And there's the great gifts from the show. There's another thing that Craig Thompson, who was the first ever guest on Words and Pictures, those 10 years ago, has been generous enough to support KBOO with an original design, which is now available on our brand newest t-shirt. The artwork features his happy Doot Doot Garden characters, and it shouts, hooray for KBOO. You can get this shirt for a $5 per month minimum contribution to KBOO, or plump down the $60 all at one time. We are not fussy about which way you do it, but do it. This is a great t-shirt. Folks will love it, and especially if you're a fan of Craig Thompson, we've got great Craig Thompson things, we've got Pat Moriarty things, but mostly we've got KBOO, 877-500-5266, a station that puts on a show about comic artists. Many times I've heard people that Concha's interviewing say, nobody does this. I've never had, this is an unusual show. And yes, it is. 877-500-5266 is how you can support this and all the other programming on KBOO. And you can do it now. Do it now before the half hour ends. A couple calls,
with sustaining memberships of, let's say, $10 a month. That would work, don't you think, Ani?
It would work. It would actually take us to our goal this morning. We'd love to hear from you. Maybe you are somebody that can give a little bit more than that. Maybe you can sustain us at a monthly rate of $20 per month or $25 per month. Some people like to give a dollar a day. Try $30 a month. It's an important contribution, whatever level you can afford to contribute. Whatever you can afford to sustain us, please do sustain us now. Think about joining us in that sustaining way of a monthly contribution from $5 a month on up. Whatever you can do. And again, know that we would like to thank you with one of these fine gifts that Conch has collected, whether it be the two-part graphic novel Boxers and Saints from Gene Luen Yang, his guest today, whether it be the personalized Craig Thompson Habibi graphic novel. Those are both $75 minimum contributions, or the $100 minimum contribution for the Northwest artist Pat Moriarty quirky renditions of Northwest totem poles. You could take one of those away for your $100 contribution. You can come down to 20 Southeast 8th. Check those out. Check out the station. Or you can just give us a call right now with your pledge of support at 877-500-5266 or join us online, kboo.fm.
We're back with Gene Luen Yang. This is Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Concert. Gene is the author of the award-winning American-born Chinese and the new book, Boxers and Saints. Well, what's next for you, Gene Luen Yang? What's really exciting you right now? What prospects are in the horizon?
I have a book coming out next year that I did with an artist named Sunny Liu. He lives in Singapore. He did a book called Malenki Robot, which is amazing. He also did some of those Jane Austen adaptations for Marvel Comics. Amazing artist. He's a master at combining the comedic with the dramatic. So together we've created this graphic novel called The Shadow Hero. I did the writing and he did the art. And it's a revival of this very obscure 1940s superhero who's now in public domain. He's named the Green Turtle. Now, here's the rumor of the Green Turtle's creation. Back then, there was this tiny little publishing company called Rural Home. And they had working for them a guy named Chu Hing, who was one of the first Chinese Americans working in the American comic book industry. So Rural Home asked Chu Hing to create a superhero, and he does. He creates the Green Turtle. And the rumor is that Chu Hing really wanted the Green Turtle to be a Chinese American superhero, but Rural Home didn't think that that would sell in the American marketplace. So Chu Hing reacted by doing this really passive-aggressive thing. If you look at those early Green Turtle comics, the hero almost always has his back to the camera. And so all we see is his cape. And then whenever he is turned around, something is blocking his face. It's either hidden by shadow or it's blocked by a piece of furniture or another character's head. And rumor is that Chu Hing drew it this way so that we never get a clear shot of the character's face in order to be able to imagine this character the way he originally intended it as a Chinese American. Now, the Green Turtle was not very popular. He was canceled after 5 issues. And we never find out his secret identity. We never find out his secret origin. We never find out if he actually was a Chinese American. That's where Sunny and I come in. We're telling the story called The Shadow Hero, which firmly establishes the Green Turtle as the first Asian American superhero.
Well, I think our listeners are definitely going to look forward to that project. It sounds like a really groundbreaking book. The author is Gene Luen Yang. The book is Boxers and Saints. Gene, it's been a real pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you for coming out today.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was wonderful to talk to you.
This has been a special membership drive edition of Words and Pictures on KBOO. I'm your host, S.W. Concert. Thanks to all our listeners for joining us. And now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.
It's time for the KBOO News headlines for Thursday, October 10th. Oregon Representative Kurt Schrader hopes to end the government shutdown and raise the debt ceiling by working with a bipartisan delegation of 40 of his congressional colleagues. To do this, the health device tax would be repealed, and in exchange, the government would be funded for 6 months. In Washington state, officials from the State Shorelines Hearing Board have revoked permits for two oil train terminals. After the Quinault Indian Nation, the Sierra Club, and the Surfrider Foundation, represented by the legal group Earth Justice, appealed to the board. Westway Terminal Company and Imperium Terminal Services want to store up to 1.5 million barrels of crude from other parts of the U.S. at the Port of Grays Harbor. According to the board, the permit issued by the city of Hoquiam did not take into account the ecological ramifications of having two large oil terminals in the harbor. Proponents say that crude by rail can be safe and would create 100 jobs in the area. Opponents cited the train explosion in Quebec, Canada last July that blew up a town center and killed 47 people. Unlike interstate pipelines that are heavily regulated, crude by rail projects lack relevant review process. A chemical watchdog group wants a ceasefire in Syria so that the chemical weapons there can be dealt with. The Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons chief had a press conference bringing awareness to the 20 sites in Syria that need to be visited in the coming weeks. Also, the November 1st deadline is looming. The Syrian government currently controls most of the production sites. A McDonald's employee got arrested yesterday after confronting the company president, Jeff Stratton, during a speech at the Union League Club of Chicago. Nancy Salgado, a single mother of two, demanded to know why she only makes $8.25 after 10 years of employment. Salgado informed Stratton that she could not buy shoes and sometimes food for her kids because her wages are too low and wanted to know why she can't get a raise. Though police arrested her for trespassing, she only received a ticket. She and six other members of the group Fight for $15 had tickets to the affair, but were kicked out after the confrontation. This has been the KBOO News Headlines. I'm Kristen Yount. Tune in to KBOO every weekday at 5 p.m. for the latest in local, national, and international news produced by volunteers in our Southeast Portland studios.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Hopworks Urban Brewery, committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible at their carbon-neutral eco brew pubs. Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver. Available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia, information at 503-232 HOPS or hopworksbeer.com. Shocks of Sheba has also been made possible by The Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest.